This is episode 36 of the Driving Eureka podcast. In this episode, we'll discuss why the customer is often wrong, pictures versus words, and how to grow loyalty. Let's go! The Driving Eureka podcast with Doug Hall and Trip Babbitt is sponsored by the Eureka Ranch. The ranch specializes in helping companies find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Okay, we're into a third part of our series on the science of innovation success. And the three topics we're going to talk about this time are why the customer is often wrong. That's interesting. Pictures versus words, and how to grow loyalty. So why the customer is often wrong. I thought the customer was always right, Doug.
Well, as it turns out, and this is really interesting, and this is original research that the Eureka Ranch team did, and it's specifically associated with innovations, okay? So it's taking something that's new to the world. I got this meaningfully anything that people don't have. And what we don't spend a lot of time thinking about is we have a sales force that's used to selling the same old stuff. Then we bring them something new and they sell it like they're selling the same old stuff, which is they cut deals, which is like they're not helping the process here. And so they got to take a different approach. But what was interesting is that we took a huge database. We had over 800 times. We had customers that were shown innovations, things that were different. And we asked them if they were like how likely they would be to buy them.
Okay.
And then what I did is I called them back and asked them, did they buy it or not? Okay. So, I mean, this is like a tracking study. So you got 800 people times people are looking at something, they're making a decision, and then you call them back and see what happened. So what was interesting about it was we asked them how likely they would do it in the 6 months, and we followed up at 6 months. So real clean. And of the 250 or so who said they absolutely, positively, definitely, I'm going to buy this thing. You are great. I love you. I love you. I love you. only less than half the time, 45% of the time, did they actually do it. I mean, come on, baby. You told me you loved me and you didn't even bother to buy it. You know? I mean, how discouraging is that?
So what happened? Did were you able to dig in a little bit deeper as far as each of those?
I don't know. They got a second thought, or they found something prettier, or something got distracted. You know, they got distracted on it. They thought it sounded like a good idea, but either they learned more or whatever happened. Maybe they asked their friends, and that was that. So here's the good news. We looked at the people who said they definitely weren't going to do it. There was no chance. No chance they're going to do it. 1 in 5, 20% actually did make a purchase. Okay?
Okay.
So just because somebody says no, and just because somebody says yes, doesn't mean they're going to do it. So we're going to come back to this again in another episode. But when they say no, maybe no. Don't give up. And when they say yes, close the sale as fast as possible. Be ready to take the sale because it's going to change. You're going to lose less than half of them. So it's interesting. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that these are new things that they've never seen before. And so they've got to do some processing of them.
That may be the differentiator as far as that it is a meaningfully unique product that you ultimately made. Interesting. I wouldn't have expected that. I would have thought that 20%, that seems awfully high. So, yeah. Okay.
I hate you. Not really. I hate you 80%. 20% might be okay.
All right.
Those are the extremes, by the way, Trip. Those are the extremes. There's also a whole bunch of people in the middle where you see the same distribution. And so the people say, I probably don't want a whole lot more of those go up. But I'm just talking the extremes here in this segment.
Okay. All right. Pictures versus words.
Okay. So this is kind of controversial with people. We've got a billboard world. People are like, just show me the pictures. I like the pictures. I just like pictures. I don't like to read because it takes cognitive energy to read. But some studies were done with eye tracking research where an infrared signal tracks where the eye is looking as participants page through a magazine. And it's over 1,300 ads, over 3,000 consumers. And research found that when it came to getting customers to stop and take notice of an advertisement, text, the words, were twice as effective as pictures. And when it came to holding customer attention, text was an incredible 15 times more effective. And so while, yes, you can have a pretty picture, the fact of the matter is news matters, ideas matter. And a picture may be worth 1,000 words. The problem is it's a whole 1,000 words and it's a whole 1,000 different words, where words tell a very specific message. So take, fire up that word processor, get your pen and pencil, and say specifically, what is your meaningful uniqueness? What is the benefit promise you're making? And why should I believe you? Tell me the story of why you're great. Because if you don't, you're leaving up to the customer to try to figure it out.
Yeah, I would have thought that the pictures would be, maybe do the pictures provide an initial draw, and then it's the words that kind of solidify things? No.
That's not what the research said.
Really?
The research said to get them to get their attention, to get them to take notice, the text was twice effective. They've numbed out the images. I mean, for Christ's sakes, 80% of them are stock images anyways. I mean, give me a break, you know. There's nothing there. And they just don't do it. But this is the difference. When we measured teams, we measured thousands of teams at the ranch in the act of creating, and we asked likability. How much did you like what you're doing? How much fun was it? And we looked at that against the number of ideas created. We found no relationship between liking and fun with effectiveness. But when we said, how effective was this team at coming up with ideas against the objective, we got a very strong relationship. So there's a difference between play and work. There's a difference between entertainment and selling.
That's interesting. You know?
And I think we've got a lot of art directors who think they're Cecil B. DeMille or something, you know, trying to entertain people as opposed to telling me. I mean, how many commercials you see, they go, I have no idea what the heck that was about.
Oh, yeah. Especially nowadays.
That is not a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Let me tell you what. Listen to this. Ready?
Okay.
That's the sound of wasted money, what it does. One more time so you can hear it again. Nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something new. I had not run into that. Okay. Next one is how to grow loyalty.
So a couple of weeks back, I asked you the question, is it better to get new customers or to sell more to existing customers? And the answer there was new customers. Yep. Now, that said, we have to walk and chew gum at the same time, because a leaky bucket, as Dr. Franklin says, never gets filled. So you can't be losing existing customers. So what I did is I took the data, 9,804 businesses, and I looked at, of existing customers, what happened when we increased the number of times they bought versus the amount they bought when they purchased. Okay?
Okay.
So the question is it better to get them to buy more frequently or to buy more when they're buying? And what the research found was the increasing dollars per purchase was 3.8 times more important than the number of times customers purchased. Okay?
Okay.
So we think we'll just get them to buy on a frequent basis. But the reality is each time they come up to the aisle or go onto the internet or go into the Amazon jungle, you know, and they type in that search thing, they keep giving other suggestions. And you own a certain part of the roulette wheel, if you would. And the people are just as likely to say, oh, yes, I always buy Zigo, but now there's Bingo. I think I'll try Bingo this time. And so if you want to get your business to grow, that supersized thing they do at the fast food places, it really works. It really works. Get them to buy more when they're buying. package up your stuff so that they can buy. How can you get more of their share of requirements? How can you get more of them to do it? That's what it does.
Okay. So a related question to this I've always wondered about is when you're, because you're inventing new products all the time, or, you know, from new ideas and doing those types of things, is it easier to sell to your existing customer or to new customers? How would you answer that?
Usually it's not as simple of a question.
Okay.
Because if the question is to get a dollar from them, mm-hmm. you can get a dollar from the existing customers. The problem is instead of buying the thing that they did before, they now buy your new one.
Right.
So it's all cannibalization. And so the net growth of what you've got can be sometimes pretty tiny. When it comes to getting additional sales, it is far easier to get additional sales by getting new customers to buy than it is to get existing customers with an innovation. Now, that said, you got to have a loyalty program. And the biggest on the loyalty program is the more you can get them into where you get a higher share of what they buy by getting them to stock up, to get them to do it. And there's some variation by industry, obviously. But as a general rule, you are retrialing every time they buy because it's not a static world. We have this mindset in our head that once a customer's bought us, they can't see anything else in the world except us. Well, that's just not the way the world works.
Right.
There's other cheese balls sitting in a room creating ideas to try to take you out. You know, and I've had the opportunity, having done this for 40 years, there's some industries where I've worked with four of the five biggest players. And it's hilarious. You know, we have to keep quiet from a security standpoint, but it's hilarious to hear them talking about these other companies. Like, they have no clue what's going on, you know, with these other companies or how they're thinking about it. And they go, well, that's just stupid. They can't make that work. And they don't understand. They've got a different business model. And of course, I shut up. I don't say anything because that's just, in our industry, you don't stay in the innovation business a long time if you have loose lips, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things I find interesting. You guys very rarely will talk about existing clients. It's hard to get information from you on that.
Interestingly, I was talking to a vendor because I'm doing a big project for a client, and we have these sort of black ops projects we'll do.
Oh, where, no.
Yeah, corporations. We've done a bunch of them over the years. And for major companies where they'll hire us to go do something, to explore something that maybe, and they don't want their competitor to know that they're looking at it. And so they don't want to be associated with it. So they use us to do it. And we'll file trademarks and patents and different things and then assign them to them and do them with them. And so in this case here, there's a vendor that's going to be very important for us. They're going to run clinical studies. It's a medical thing. And I purposely went and I had dinner with them, and then I spent the day with them and drank wine and whiskey, and I asked questions and I asked questions about different things from 17 different directions, and they didn't tell me anything about who they were working with or what they were doing. And I went back to the client and I said, they're good. You know, because the minute anybody talks, you know, if you ask them, well, tell us what you did for them, and they talk about it, then just remember, they're going to do the same about your stuff, you know, and people get mad at us about it. It's a founding principle of what we do. Now, we do talk about some things because a lot of clients have talked about it. We do talk about things when our names are on patents because it's public record.
Right.
And clients have been very kind and given us permission to do it. But unless they've made a disclosure, we really, really don't talk much at all. I mean, it's incredibly, I mean, I think in 40 years, there was one case where something was talked about. And interestingly, it was bizarre. It was one division, another division found out about what another division was doing. And it was the same company and they were upset about it. And it was an inadvertent slip. And, you know, we thought, geez, same company. No, that's not the way it was. No, we're competitors.
Oh, man. My gosh.
We may be
Isn't
part
that
of
awful?
Corporate gods, but yeah. We compete. So there's to be no disclosure across silos. Oh, and this was early on in the history of the ranch. Mm. And oh, man, I learned a lesson on that one.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's interesting. So Doug, when people hire the ranch, are they usually looking for new products then for new customers? Is that kind of the mindset, or do they not even go into it with that type of mindset? Does that just come out later?
It's less specific than that. Okay. Generally, I mean, because everything we do is co-development with them.
Okay.
And you know, we work with them. And generally, it's if I was to break it down, come up with a way for us to make more money.
Okay.
And they're agnostic. I mean, they'll say a bunch of stuff, they'll put a bunch of stuff, but they're looking for a way to generate growth.
Okay.
You know, they're going down the life cycle curve. They need growth. And so they're generally, we need some fresh ideas and we need to spark something to grow. Sometimes it's very specific. There's a growing market or there's a competitor and they want to leapfrog a competitor and those things. But at the end of the day, it's how can we grow more and profitably grow? And the only way you can be profitable to grow is you have to innovate, obviously. Otherwise, it's just a commodity game and you can't make any money. So,
all right. Well, that's a good way, I think, to end the Science of Innovation Success Part 3.
Yeah. It's about not giving up, the power of words, and supersize. If you want to learn more, the book on innovation engineering called Driving Eureka has got more of these fun facts.
Thank you for listening to the Driving Eureka podcast. This podcast is part of the Innovation Engineering Institute. Innovation engineering is a new field of academic study and leadership science. Its mission is to change the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day, resulting in increased speed and decreased risk. To learn more about on-campus, off-campus, live and online courses, visit innovationengineering.org.